can still remember the smell of fresh oil from my granddaddy's duck gun. And not getting a wink of sleep, waiting for the morning to come. And then there's the time my dad and I went a line down at Lake Lake. That's where he taught me to tie this knot that I still use today. These are the memories that mean so much to me. Spending precious time outside with the love of family.
The hit was perfect. We went back out and it was.
This message will be handed down for all eternity.
Good job.
You teach your child about the wild and respect the land and sea.
There he is, baby.
Trust in the Lord and most of all carry on.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful, beautiful first weekend in May. Weekend, this is your host, Ray I. Came back with a little Legacy. Love that song. We played a little Legacy because we'll be talking to the Conservation Federation Missouri, Brandon Butler. We continue our series with the Conservation Federation Missouri's podcast, where Brandon turned the tables on me and interviewed me. And we left off last week starting to talk about the clown. We'll do a little clown talk. And then we're going to get into some tactics for hunting turkeys in the Ozarks. Brandon had some questions about roosting gobblers in the hills in the Ozarks. So here we go.
The wildlife and its habitat cannot speak, so we must, and we will.
You're listening to the Conservation Federation of Missouri podcast. Here's Executive Director Brandon Butler.
I'm sitting down with legendary hunter Ray I. Speaking of clowns, I think there's a few stories about you floating around out there.
Yeah, the feral clown. We've had more fun with that. It all started some years ago. We had an outdoor rider media hunt. And Cabela's was a sponsor, and a gentleman, I just won't say his last name, but Scott came down and showed a weakness, told me that he had a phobia about clowns. And it kind of started right there, and after we scared the bejesus out of him with a clown, it started growing where we were scaring more and more people with the clown. I had a great...
But with a clown is with you with a mask on.
Mask on, and we actually ended up with a full suit. You know, with the hoop skirt, the bow tie, the big shoes, all of it, top hat. And we had a clown with teeth. We had all these different clowns and it went from there. We call it the feral clown. And we did some radio shows where we interviewed the feral clown. Some magazine articles came out. Anyway, it spread.
Wasn't it in Field and Stream?
It was in Field and Stream. And that was with Bill Heavey because he was in a media camp where the clown showed up and he asked me the story about the best scare ever. And it was when we had the young man on the deer hunt with his dad. The kid got his first deer when he was little, and then he got older and he got to be a little bit of a smart guy, you know. He kind of popped off to his Uncle Ray. So I told him, Dad, I said, look, I got to go home, so why don't you guys hunt my TV blind for deer? And oh, he was just beside himself, and I didn't go home. I had full clown. I was in the blind when this kid showed up the next morning.
In the dark.
In the dark, pitch black. And I heard his dad say, you need to really thank your Uncle Ray for letting us have this. This is unbelievable. We get to hunt here. He said, now, you back in there and get your chair. Here's a light. He had a little green light. And he said, then I'll hand your gun in. But when he backed in and turned around, I was sitting on the chair in a full clown with the teeth. And I went, I've been waiting for you. And he literally ran through the blind because he couldn't get back at home. Broke the rods in it, tipped it over. And I jumped up and I had a green light because I had it holding my face under the chin. You know, you shine it up. And Dad was on his back crawling backwards. He wasn't helping the kid. The kid, I took pictures. I still got photos of that blind in the field where he ran through it and broke the rods in it. It was so funny. By that time, the clown had got very popular. And I called double bull blinds at that time. You know, I had to. And I said, I got some broken rods. How many you need? And I started telling him about the rods were broken. He said, well, I'll just send you a bundle. And he goes, by the way, what happened to your blind? I said, clown damage. He goes, oh, okay, I'll get those right out to you. So, I mean, it didn't even affect him. But there were so many stories there. So many guys have seen the clown in different situations. But one of them was at the cabin on the Piney. And the Missouri Outdoor Communicators were down. Okay? So they were down. And I had a bad boy buggy. And I had the full clown. I had to deal with the teeth. And it was one of the members was going to be floating in a red canoe. Bobby Whitehead said, such and such. And I said, oh, I'm going to get him with the clown. So I took the buggy across the river, hit it. And I got in where it turns, his little channel turns to the right and it narrows. And I was laying down in the weeds there in the cattails waiting for the red canoe. I saw the red canoe. And I come up out of the brush with the clown, charged the canoe with the teeth and stuff. And it wasn't the guy in the red canoe. It was three girls in a canoe. And they're screaming and going sideways and paddling. And I go, oh, my God. And I run back. I grab the buggy, and I run up in the woods, and I hide for a while. And I come back, and the guy is sitting there. And I come in, and I go, Bobby, what happened? He said, oh, he didn't go. I said, who was in a red canoe? He says, I don't know. But the story, long and short of this is, in town in Licking, Missouri, at the local place, there's a big table where the locals, and Bobby Whitehead was with me. I have a witness. We went in the next morning. There was a guy at the table, hitting the table, says, I'm telling you, there was a clown on the river yesterday. They were talking about it in the cafe.
Oh, man. What you can become known for.
Oh, unbelievable. The years we've done the clown, it's just, this, you never knew where he's going to pop up.
Is he retired?
He's been semi-retired, but he's kind of laying back. He's waiting for the right moment. He will reappear. I promise you that.
The clown has a future.
Yeah, he looked in the window one time at a cabin, had to get up on the buggy to look through the window, and the guy knocked the lamp over and stuff. And then when the guys were in there and he came in, he had his bags packed, and they said, where are you going? You got 3 days. He goes, oh, I got a lot of work to go. And he left the camp. Never said anything to anybody about the clown. He left.
The clown ruins camps. Oh. And double bull blinds.
Destroys double bull blinds.
All right. Well, I got to get back to getting serious. So I've got some guys coming in for turkey season this year that I'm interested in impressing these guys. You know, they're coming in from Seattle and Montana. And, you know, I've been really talking the Ozarks up. I'm telling them, like, look, you know, I lived in Montana. I know how beautiful it is. I know what you guys are dealing with out there. But this place is special. You got to understand the history of it all.
Right.
The fact that these birds were the birds that were used for the restoration of most eastern states, for most midwestern states. There's this incredible story here. But at the same time, I want to make sure that we get on some birds.
Right.
And that it appears that I know what I'm talking about. Because I'm pretty green down there. You know, I've killed a bunch of birds on ag fields in the northern part of the state and Indiana. And I've killed some birds out west. But I've only killed a few down in the Ozarks. And I'm talking a big game, so give me some big Ray Eye tips. I know two things. I know Ray Eye says calling is everything.
Absolutely.
And roosting is the key to success.
It really is. Roosting is what makes it happen for me, my meaty hunt. So
let's start with roosting.
Roosting, if you could get down and listen to the turkeys from a distance and hear them gobbling when they wake up in the morning, listen to them. Not just at daylight, but where do they go, where are they at 10 o'clock, and learn as much about those turkeys as you can in those areas that you're going to hunt. But if you could roost those turkeys and find out not only where they roost, and I'm not talking about staying back 200 yards, hear one fly up and gobble. I mean, finding out which tree he's in, which direction he flies up from. You got to put a lot of work into roosting. But, you know, I do it. Traveling for television shows and these outdoor media hunts, you know, I do 9 states a spring, and I'd go into a place in the dark, 3 a.m. I've never seen in my life. And they put me in there. Well, I use the calling to locate and find out what the turkeys are doing. But if I can get in there, if I get in there in the dark the first day, the next night I'm roosting because I heard the turkeys that morning. Or if I come to a new place, if I can get there a day ahead of time, I go in. Roosting teaches me everything I need to know about the turkeys.
So is there a small window of time where you can roost birds?
The best time, if it's open country, well, you're talking Ozarks, but if it's open country, don't go too early because you'll bump them. You want to get right at dark when they start flying up. But if you can get in open country and stay back, if you got fields, watch them where they leave the field, right at dark. Then once they go in and it gets dark, go down to that corner. But stay hidden, stay back a little bit in the cover, and then owl or turkey call. I do mostly.
So you get down to that corner.
I call. And usually turkey calling makes them gobble on the roost way better than owl hooting.
Loud, soft?
No, just call like a turkey. They'll answer just like what the hens do. And I'll cut and yelp, and I'll even do a fly-up cackle. And I've got some video segments where we're standing 50 yards from gobblers up in the roost, and I'll cut and cackle on a call, and everybody's gobbling. You hear me tell my guy, well, we got a rooster. We better go. We're both laughing. But if you can follow them to the roost, and in the ridge country in Ozarks, wherever you've heard turkeys before, get in those areas in the evening and listen for them to fly up. You can hear a turkey in the Ozarks fly up a long ways off. Big birds make a lot of noise. But there's a way that they fly up, and a lot of times in the hill country, they fly from a ridge or bench. They'll go to the end of a ridge and pitch out on a tree that's down on the side of the hill. So 9 out of 10, because they're turkeys, they'll pitch back on that same point, and that's where you need to be. You don't want to be on any other side of that turkey. I learned that years ago. Come in below a turkey, and he's gobbling on the side of the hill, and then he pitches down right up on the side of that ridge or on the bench.
So I've got an area it's a real long ridge, big ridge. Now imagine that ridge is kind of running along where your knuckles are, and then there's 3 fingers. So imagine
start right there.
Your first 3 fingers are going down, and the fingers go down into a real deep holler,
mm-hmm.
and there's a creek down at the bottom.
They got to be roosting right in there, right off one of those fingers.
So if you just get up on that.
Get up on there and listen and call with a turkey call in the evening. And if you can listen from a distance and see where they wake up, because in the spring, you know, the turkeys break up, the gobblers are in different spots. They got a favorite roosting place so the hens can hear them and where they can talk to the other birds. That's why they like to be off the end of those hills, you know, the big hollers and stuff, and those big they can hear all the way. You hear turkeys gobbling around both sides. They're there for a reason. They'll pitch back the way they came up. They're not normally going to pitch down in the valley or pitch from the valley and get up in the tree. They're going to come off the top and fly out to a tree. A lot of times they roost straight level with where they pitch off, where the tree's down below, and getting those big limbs. I can tell you one from 1973 down at my grandpa's. It was my Uncle Mont's place. It was a ridge we call Buford Ridge. And on that ridge, the turkey would gobble out on this glade. He'd strut on the glade. Well, I was trying to figure him out. Well, when he strutted on that glade, then he'd go back up on the hill, and he'd pitch out from the side of the ridge onto a tree that was way down, kind of off the side of the hill, and he was level with where he flew from. And he only had to flutter 30 feet to be on a big limb. But if you were down in the field or on the ridge below him and hear him gobbling, you'd set up and call and call, and you'd never kill him. He'd never come to you. He'd just flutter back on that ridge, and that's where he did his thing, and then he'd strut out to the glade. I learned that from that turkey. So I went down there in 1973. I had a 66 Chevelle, okay, 396.
What a hunting
day. I had to be to work. I was working at that time. I had to be at work up on Manchester, Lindell Bumper. I had to be at work at 8 o'clock, and I was at Johnson Mountain in a 396 Chevelle, and it was raining. I mean raining. I was listening to Brown Sugar on the radio. I'll never forget it. And I woke up, and it was right at light, and the rain had stopped, and I heard him gobble. And I got out of car and went up through that field, hit the creek, went up, hit the ridge, and didn't go where anybody else would set up on him. And I climbed the hill and got on the hill right level with him, just pretty close. And I just tree called to him, clucked a few times. I saw the limb bounce, heard him wing. He lit the ground. I killed him when his feet touched the ground. I grabbed him, ran back down the hill, threw him in a 396 Chevelle, and I was at work at 8 o'clock on Manchester, 4211 Manchester, Lindell Bumper.
That's a good story.
That concludes this week's segment of Brandon Butler interviewing myself, Ray I, your handsome yet humble host. And we'll continue with the series from the Conservation Federation of Missouri next week. With that, we need to take a break, and we'll see you all on the other side. Story time's coming up next.
Where he taught me to tie this knot.